The proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to ring in the absent members.
All in favor say aye. Opposed say no. The motion prevails, and the Sergeant-at-Arms is instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Carol Tomer from Pilgrim Lutheran Church in St. Paul. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Holy One, we remember that on this very day, 111 years ago, Cy Young threw the first perfect game in the modern era of baseball. And today we also celebrate Cinco de Mayo and give thanks for Mexican Americans and the many communities, journeys, and heritages that come together in ever-unfolding ways to make up this Minnesota community. Our project of being Minnesota is dynamic and overflowing with diverse blessings. But it is not a perfect game, we confess, nor is the work of any branch of our government. You, O God, have not drafted us into perfection, no matter how much we long for a more perfect union. But you have called us into working for the common good, our shared well-being perfectly interwoven into one another. We are a union with the unity of purpose written into our Constitution and into our very hearts. Strengthen, we pray, the hearts and minds and bodies of each senator and Senate staff member here. Give them perseverance in the last weeks of this session, that they may not be exhausted by the perfect, but be renewed in the good. The common good and the blessings of life that depend so perfectly on our community webs of interconnectedness and on the perfectly balanced web of your whole creation. It is our turn at bat, and you call us to play a good game, not a perfect game, and therefore each of us was able to make the team. For your blessings, perfect and good, and for our servant roles in caring for these blessings, we give you thanks, O God. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fischbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rood, Saxog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Wieger, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. Third order of business is messages from the House. The Secretary will read the messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of 5 members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file. Senate file number 2101, a bill for an act relating to state government, appropriating money for agriculture, environment, natural resources, jobs, and economic development. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Garofalo, Hoppe, Neuberger, Gunther, and Norton. Senate file number 2101 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 1437, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business is the first reading of House files.
House file number 1437, a bill for an act relating to agriculture, establishing a budget for agriculture, appropriating money for agriculture.
First reading, House file 1437. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that House file 1437 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of reports pertaining to appointments.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the committee reports are laid on the table. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I believe they were adopted.
You already did that. Seventh order of business, the second reading of House bills. Senator Bach, you did need to move to lay the appointments on the table. So,
Madam President, I move the committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the committee appointments reports will be laid on the table. The seventh order of business is the second reading of House bills. House files number 546, 1003, 1358, and 1770 are given their second reading. The eighth order of business is the introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on the Senate bill introductions and referred as indicated. First reading of Senate bills. Ninth order of business is motions and resolutions. They will be adopted as one motion. These are author's motions. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that Senate file 2104-2104 be withdrawn from the Committee on Capital Investment and returned to the author. This is my bill.
On the motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and Senate file 2104 will be returned to its author. Senator Bach, and then Senator Bach, are you about to make a motion to recess? Senator Weber would like to make an announcement prior to that. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam President. I would just like to extend an invitation to all to come to the front of the Capitol starting at 11:30 and running till 1 o'clock for turkey burgers today. This has been organized in support of the turkey industry in Minnesota, and it started out to be sponsored by the GOP Rural Caucus, but I do wish to acknowledge and thank members of the DFL Caucus who have also contributed to this event. And so I encourage you again starting at 11:30 to gather in front of the Capitol. Thank you.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, the majority caucus will caucus at noon, and we hope to be back on the floor at 1 o'clock.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Republicans will caucus at noon in 1:12.
Madam President, I move a recess of the Senate.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The Senate is in recess.
Madam President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. Members, the list is on your desk.
First one on special orders is Senate File 239, number 118, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 239 is a simple bill. It does not affect how current forfeiture laws work at all. It simply adds the crime of financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult to the list of felony-level offenses forfeiture applies to. It's another tool available to the growing offenses against our aging and vulnerable populations. It's in addition to restitution and law enforcement and liens on forfeited items still get paid first, but the balance can be used to repay the person taken advantage of. This bill gives the authority to forfeit property that has been gotten by funds that were taken through financial exploitation. If someone takes money and purchases an asset, like a boat or house, currently that asset cannot be forfeited to recoup the restitution. This bill will just allow financial exploitation to be added to the crime you can forfeit property for, and it makes no changes to the current forfeiture statute.
Further discussion on Senate File 239? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 239 its third reading.
Senate File Number 239, a bill for an act relating to public safety, adding the crime of financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult to definition of designated offense in forfeiture laws.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and the title agreed to. Next file on special orders is number 84, Senate File 1478, Senator Dziedzic.
Thank you, Madam President. Good afternoon, Madam President and members. Before you is Senate File 1478, a Department of Corrections bill to repeal the old interstate compacts on juveniles. There are two different compacts currently in statute, a new interstate compact and then the other one for states not involved or signed up yet in the new one. Georgia was the last state to finally join the new interstate compact. They joined in 2014, so now all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and the U.S. Virgin Islands have enacted the juvenile interstate compact. Puerto Rico is not a member of the new contract, but they were not a party to the other compact either. The compact regulates issues regarding the interstate movement of juvenile offenders. Senate File 1478 repeals language in Minnesota Statute 260.51 relating to the old compact since it is no longer needed. Minnesota signed this compact into law around 1957. The new updated compact was signed into law in 2010. Not repealing the language from the old compact could cause a conflict or ambiguity in law. The bill also repeals Minnesota Statute 260.53 regarding the appointment of a new state of a of the State Compact Administrator. This is not needed since the new compact in Minnesota Statute 260.151 addresses this appointment. Remember, this is a simple bill, and I ask for a green vote.
Further discussion on Senate File 1478. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1478 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1478, a bill for an act relating to corrections, repealing the old Interstate Compact for Juveniles.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders, number 90, Senate File 1413, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to present Senate File 1413. This is a simple bill that hopes to make a clarification that will provide additional protections and safety for our students when they're on school buses. Senate File 1413 seeks to clarify the status of a school bus as school property under Minnesota Statutes 609.605 when the bus is on a route. While this statute makes clear the penalty for trespassing on school property, there is no mention of school buses in this definition. By adding this subdivision, subdivision 4A under this bill, the status of school buses is made clear. Furthermore, it establishes the school bus driver as in control of the decision whether or not to allow an unauthorized adult to board the bus. The penalty prescribed under this proposed subdivision is identical to that of trespass on all other types of school property. I am grateful that the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation saw some incidents happening around the country and took a close look at Minnesota statute and realized there was an opportunity to clarify this and strengthen our protections for our students. Again, this is a simple bill, and members, I would appreciate your support for Senate File 1413. Thank you.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Kent take some questions?
Senator Kent, will you yield? She will yield. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Kent, Madam President, I'm wondering if on the school bus, if a parent who has prior permission from the school could remove their child from the school bus while en route.
Senator Kent.
Madam President, in the example that Senator Hall provides, that would be an authorized person. So there are policies that school districts have providing for parental engagement with the buses, in which case they become authorized. This is focusing on unauthorized people.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Kent. In reading 1.13, I just wanted to make sure that the parent was still okay. Gives authorization to, or does not to apply to a child, a school employee, or a volunteer. A parent may not be a volunteer, and so that's what concerned me. As long as were sure that a parent who has prior authorization from the school could remove their child, I'm okay with this bill.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, these are important clarifications. We had testimony in committee that, in fact, existing school policies would prevail in that kind of a case.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Kent yield for a question?
Senator Kent, she will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Kent, thank you very much for bringing this forward. I know the intent here is to put one more area of protecting our children who become very vulnerable in different situations. Being a bus driver for 11 years, I understand the situation. I do have a couple of questions, Madam President. Senator Kent, the trespass laws are, I think everybody's quite familiar with them. If you ask somebody to leave and they don't, it turns into a violation. Was there ever talk of any signage on the buses to address this issue at all, or was there any talk about that, giving the parents a little forewarning before they even open the door? Or and also the other question is what's the overall length of a school bus trip in Minnesota? Did you talk about that? I just happened to think of that on the way up the chamber here. There's got to be all kinds of different, especially rural versus metro and suburbia. Did you talk about the overall length that driver does have basically has the huge function of delivering them safely as well as keeping them protected while they're on the road?
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam President. The issue is not the length of the trip. The issue is the purpose of the trip. And so when, as is stated in the bill, it is when the school bus is on a route that this would apply. The policies regarding trespassing are the same as any other form of school property. This is just clarifying that in these circumstances, a school bus is considered school property, and that the bus driver, who is the authority in that moment, who in that moment is concerned with keeping those students safe, has the authority for an unauthorized person to say that they are not allowed to be on that bus. When there are cases of parents, and I've done this myself because I've got a school-age kid, and you have to interact with the bus driver, those kinds of policies have been spelled out to parents. They know they have to provide written notice, for example, for a change in transportation arrangements for a given occasion. This is specifically referring to an unauthorized person who would not fit that kind of conversation. There are district policies regarding when parents and how parents and under what circumstances parents can enter school buildings, and the same would apply for school buses. To Senator Ingebrigtsen's question about signage, that frankly did not come up.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Kent yield just for one more question?
She will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
The question that I have is that if a parent were to knock on the door and gain that one-foot entrance, saying that they had just called. They are, and I think folks in the chamber should know that I think there is communication now almost in all school buses. So if they were to make that contact with the parent, the school bus driver probably would know that ahead of time. So I guess it's more of a comment than a question. So I'll just say this is something that I will support, and thank you very much for carrying it.
Further discussion on Senate File 1413. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1413 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1413, a bill for an act relating to criminal justice, expanding the trespass crime to include trespassing on a school bus.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 58 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. They're right there now. The next bill in special orders is numbered 121, Senate File 674. Senator Marty.
Madam President and members, Senate File 674 is a bill that deals with, would prohibit the sale of personal care products that contain synthetic plastic microbeads. These are little tiny spheres that are added to certain facial scrubs and so on that are used to scrub the face and so on. There's great concerns about the fact that the way these are expected to be used, they are washed down the sink and through the sewage treatment systems and into our lakes and rivers. The industry is recognizing the problem and says they're going to phase these out. This language, we took their dates on phase out, we took their time when we took out the penalties and all those sorts of things. But I think this is also make sure there aren't going to be loopholes in the law. And so we would simply give them a process that if you have some alternative product, a biodegradable plastic, all you'd have to do is you'd have to apply to the commissioner, the PCA, to make your case that they are, and then you could be exempted from the law. But otherwise, this would follow through and ban the use of microbeads in Minnesota. The trouble is these beads are tiny. They're about the size of fish eggs. Fish eat them. They confuse them for that. They tend to, being a plastic substance, it does tend to attract pesticides, other toxics from the water, and the fish consume them, causes problems with fish consumption advisories. It's not an issue we had a number of years ago. This would be a simple ban. We use the industry timeline, and I'd appreciate your support. And Madam President, I have the A2 amendment at the desk.
The Secretary report the A2 amendment.
Senator Marty moves to amend Senate File number 674 as follows, page 1, and this is the A2 amendment.
Senator Marty.
And Madam President, members, this is just deleting the definition of plastic in the bill. Right now we have looked in statute, we have something like we've used plastic is a term hundreds of times in statute. We've never seen a need to define it. I think that this definition may be restrictive and not useful, and I'd urge your support. This is simply removing the definition.
Further discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I'd be happy to stand for questions again. I think a letter from Senator Reinert and Senator Rest, two members of they sent it out to the Great Lakes Caucus, and I urge your support. This is an issue we can address and need to address.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Marty. I also want to acknowledge Senator Hoffman, who has done a lot of work on this issue, along with Senator Marty and myself. And members, I just want to make a couple comments as someone whose district is right along the shore of Lake Superior and someone who's active in the Great Lakes Legislative Caucus. You do have a letter that Senator Rest and myself signed. And, you know, members, for me, this issue really came to the forefront for me in attending the Great Lakes Legislative Caucus meeting last summer. We had a session there where Sherry Mason, who is a researcher from the State University of New York at Fredonia, and had looked at this issue of microplastics, microbeads throughout the Great Lakes. And they are prevalent in all the Great Lakes, but they are especially prevalent in our Great Lake, Lake Superior. And members, that's driven primarily by the cold nature of the lake. And of course, Lake Superior is our largest freshwater lake in the world. But just a couple statistics that really stuck with me and motivated me to want to work on this issue this session. One is that specifically to this issue of microbeads, 58% of the plastic particles found in Lake Superior were spherical. Many of us know about the garbage patch, the plastic patch that has formed in the South Pacific. Members, in that location, only 1% are these beads. So we know that they're making into the lakes and that they're staying in the lakes, especially in Lake Superior, again, because of that colder, cold water ecosystem. Secondly, members, they did a sample of Cisco fish from Lake Superior in 2014, collected 154, and in 82% of them, they found microbeads. So this should be of concern to us, not only because we're eating those fish. You know, sport fishing and just fishing in general is a very popular activity in my district, one I participate in myself. My kind of fishing is you go out on the lake and you set the downriggers and drive around, not so much the casting that probably many of you favor. But members, what makes that problem even more so concerning is that these microbeads are just natural collectants for the other pollutants that are in the lake. So it concentrates them on the microbead. The microbead makes its way into the food system. It makes its way into us, which is concerning. And the third thing I would share with you, members, is that after going to that Great Lakes Legislative Caucus meeting last summer, I went home and I talked to our sanitary sewer folks. And they just said, we have no way to try and get down to that micro level to catch these things as they're entering the system. I mean, they just pass right through and go out into the lake in what we consider to be our clean effluent. So, members, I would ask for your support on this as good stewards, not only of the Great Lakes, but especially of Lake Superior, our Great Lake. Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Marty yield for a couple of questions, please?
He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Marty, first question I have is, I know some things have been passed out here and had a chance to really look at it that closely, but can you talk to me about a study that has been done, or has there been any studies done that I can refer to or anybody in the body can refer to with regards to consumption of fish that that we talk about here that might be consuming these microbeads?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, first of all, there was the Pollution Control Agency put out a report in December, last December, on plastic microbeads, and I believe that report did discuss that issue, and Senator Reinert and Senator Rest and I think Senator Rood and some others who were Great Lakes Caucus Conference have been heard a lot more detail from, again, Senator Reinert just referred to the marine biologist, the person who had done the studies that he has been familiar with. So I know there have been some studies looking at that. The only one that I have with me is a copy of the State Pollution Control Agency study on microbeads.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you for that, Senator Marty. Why I ask that is we had a study done some years ago that was presented in committee with regards to lead. At that time, and I'm talking about sportsmen now that use lead shot on private lands and the consumption of that. So I thought maybe there was a study out saying something similar, that it was dangerous, especially to infants. But apparently there isn't. But there is something referring to it here. I will certainly look it up. The other question I had, would Senator yield for one more question?
He will yield, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Marty, you talked about the fish actually eating the microbeads. So I thought they were of size that they wouldn't be visual to the human eye. That doesn't necessarily mean, I guess, a fish can't see it. And I think that was your testimony. And if it was there any talk about the beads that are actually, it's kind of an interesting segue into this question, but the beads that are used for sport fishing, people make Sportsmen make hooks, fly hooks, and whatnot that are actually of bead in nature, and I'm assuming they're plastics. And do you know if those beads actually contain this or not? I don't know that question, but was there ever any discussion? And the reason I ask that is those hooks can actually come off, break the line, and the fish actually would end up consuming those, as well as some sports, they call themselves sports fishermen, if they don't like the fish that they're getting close to the boat, they will actually cut the line and the hook and the sinker, and every bead that's on the hook will go back down in with the fish. So was there ever any discussion about that?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, two comments. First of all, these are visible. I can share with you some jars that Senator Reinert had gotten from somebody who extracted the plastic beads out of them. You can see they're tiny, but you can see them. They're not invisible size. In terms of the larger beads that somebody might have as part of a lure or something that gets in there, first of all, the biggest issue with this is the quantity of these. A jar of facial scrub may have thousands and thousands of these in, and they're just being flushed down the drain. That's why we're trying to deal with this. It's the sheer quantity. These are tiny beads, but yes, there are bits of plastic around. Senator Reinert mentioned that. There are other problems with other types of plastic out there, but this is a very distinct one because this is one that, from the design of the product, it was meant to be flushed down the wastewater treatment system and into the lakes. So that's why we're trying to deal with this. But know that it's a the type of beads you're talking about would be much bigger than this, and that may be an issue to address, but we're trying to stop this one. And the industry has acknowledged it's a problem and is working to phase it out, and this uses their timeline.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, I appreciate your comments. I know you have a long history on these areas and having chaired a relevant committee in the past. I would just make a couple comments. I know your questions were of Senator Marty, but the best study that I'm aware of can be found just by, at least for me, an easy Google of Sherry Mason and Fredonia. That's the researcher that is focused specifically on the Great Lakes. And if you get a chance to look at the report, probably the most impactful graphic, at least, is on page 6 of the report, where it shows the concentration in the Great Lakes, and you'll see how much more concentrated these microparticles are in Lake Superior than any of the other lakes. And it really is driven by the cold nature of the ecosystem, the waters of Lake Superior. And I think Senator Marty answered this question for you as well, but these beads are visible. They're small. They're less than a millimeter typically in diameter, but they are visible. And I think specifically to your question, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the other items you mentioned are perhaps not as concerning because they're just not as prevalent. In Lake Superior, what the researchers found was a half a million to over a million of these micro beads per square kilometer. So by far the highest density on the Great Lakes.
Further discussion on Senate File 674. Senator Rode.
Madam President and members, I sit on both the Great Lakes Commission and the Great Lakes Caucus. The Great Lakes Commission is 8 states surrounding the lakes and 2 Canadian provinces of Ontario and Quebec. I also sit on the Legislative Caucus for the Great Lakes. And so we've gone to conferences all over, Quebec, Buffalo, Sheboygan, dealing with issues important to the Great Lakes. And they are many because they're a national treasure. The Council of State Governments put forth a model legislation. Microbeads are not new in the Great Lakes. We've been dealing with them in the conversations since I've been there over 3 years, trying to figure out how we solve this problem. And so the Council of State Governments came up with great model legislation. And so far, 4 of the 8 states have adopted that legislation. And I think it's good legislation. You know, Minnesota is a global economy. And if we change this model legislation, we make manufacturers less likely to bring products into Minnesota. They are not going to manufacture products that only can be sold in Minnesota. And that creates a problem for our businesses and also for our constituents. This is a good bill, and I thank Senator Marty for making the one change in the amendment. But there still is one piece of the bill that I think causes us problems that makes it less likely to be successful, and that's the fact that we now bring in the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and they become a governing body in this legislation. And I think that's very problematic because a company would now have to go for their permission. And we all know how long that takes and what big process that is. And they would have to approve the biodegradable plastic. And that becomes very, very problematic, costly to companies. And I think it makes Minnesota an island. So while I support the underlying legislation, I think it's very important that this be taken out of the bill, and we consider changing that piece. Otherwise, I think we have a good piece of legislation. But that, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency being allowed to be the governing body for this legislation, is a very, very bad idea.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. And I want to thank Senator Rood, and I want to acknowledge Senator Rood for being a passionate advocate for Lake Superior. It was, Senator, just a great pleasure to be at the meeting last summer with you and to find out the spirit and passion you had for what's in the backyard of my district. I think Senator Rood has essentially taken us right to where there probably is some difference of opinion on how we move forward on this issue. You know, that members, the issue is, yes, we can identify what's there now, but what do we do about what we may not see coming? And do we want to be back revisiting and having this body determine what products will work and what products are not? Or do we want to have a standard that says we want a product that is truly biodegradable and somebody other than this body making that determination? And I think we can have an honest difference of opinion there. I think that the MPCA is a good place to have that decision made. We are a part-time legislature. I think our duty is to proscribe where we want to go, and we have some full-time staff that can help us get there. But this is the area where we can have some disagreement, but I want to make sure for anyone listening that that doesn't mean that we don't equally share passion and concern about the lake and its ecosystem and this issue specifically.
Senator Peterson, B.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Marty yield for a question?
Senator Marty, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Marty, and I don't know the answer to this question. Could you explain the potential cost for a prospective manufacturer who maybe comes up with a replacement microbead product, and particularly the biodegradability testing? Could you just speak to the economic impact of that process and sort of how that might work going forward?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, the way we had put this in the bill was simply to say that if a manufacturer felt they produced something that would quickly biodegrade in the aquatic environment, and again, cold water in Minnesota is not an easy place for things to break down. I don't realistically think there are going to be such things, but if a manufacturer comes up with one, all they'd have to do is make a showing to the Commissioner of PCA, and they'd be exempted from the law for that product.
Further discussion on Senate File 6. Senator Peterson, J.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Marty yield?
Senator Marty, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Marty, I just kind of had some procedural questions, mainly as I was reviewing your bill. Right now, I'm not clear. Do you have a House file matched up with this bill in particular? Is it moving in the House as you have it authored under Senate File 674?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, I'm not sure the bill number, but it's Representative Uglum in the House has a bill, and I believe it's on the floor.
Senator Peterson.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Marty, if he would continue to yield, do you anticipate having a conference committee on this bill, or is it written to the same language as yours?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, there are differences between the House and Senate bill, yes.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Rood.
Madam President and members, I will be supporting this bill today. And I thank Senator Martin and Senator Reinhart for their passion on this issue. I hope that these new definitions don't stifle innovation and new technologies, because in our conversations, in our meetings the past 3 years, we have seen an industry that's been very willing to work with us, very willing to find a new solution, very willing to stop manufacturing these products because they are not interested in polluting our planet either. So I found the companies that have these in their products are already taking them out. And they're trying to find new ways for us to do this. So I hope that this doesn't stifle them in coming up with a great solution to this problem. So thank you to the bill's author. Oops, can't look that way. Thank you to the bill's author, and I will be supporting this because I do believe that this is an issue very important to the Great Lakes.
Further discussion on Senate File 674. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 674 its third reading.
Senate File Number 674, a bill for an act relating to environment, prohibiting sale of certain personal care products containing synthetic plastic microbeads.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 15 nays, the bill is passed and titled agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 124, Senate File 1270. Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Dibble moves that the following members be excused for a conference committee on House File Number 4 at 1:50 p.m. Dibble, Kent, Herr, Schmidt, and Jensen. All in favor say aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. These are the latest, Senate File 1270 are the latest recommendations from the Minnesota Statewide Human Trafficking Task Force on an ongoing review of existing sexual conduct, data privacy, and other statutes to create consistency where appropriate in how the victims of sexual violence and the victims of sex trafficking are supported through our state statutes. So the reforms include limits on the release of law enforcement investigatory records to protect the identity of sex trafficking victims, prohibiting the requirement of a polygraph test as a condition of reporting a crime, as is the case for any sexual assault victim, upgrading the statutes addressing attempts to hire a minor for prostitution, allowing as an affirmative defense in a charge of prostitution evidence of being a labor or sex trafficking victim, extending existing restriction of ownership of an adult business to include individuals convicted of sex trafficking, and extending existing statute of limitations for prosecuting sexual assaults to include sex trafficking. In addition, these reforms are also endorsed by the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And I'd appreciate your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1270. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1270 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1270, a bill for an act relating to public safety, amending provisions on data privacy, evidence, crime victims' protections, and criminal defenses relating to sex trafficking.
The Secretary will take the roll.
All members having voted that desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The last bill on special orders is number 2 on general orders, House File 262, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The bill I'd like to talk about here is a fairly technical bill dealing with a couple of different legal topics. First off, right now when land is subdivided or platted, state law requires an abstract of title. And that is becoming costly and difficult to produce at some point. So what the first part of this legislation does, Madam President and members, is it allows for a certificate of title, title opinion, title commitment, or title policy to be used in that process. And I want to point out that this is not prescriptive. It is not required. It simply allows the local governing authority to do this on their own if they choose to do so. It should be a way of expediting the process, cutting costs without any loss of accuracy. The second part of the bill deals with cancellations of contract for deed. And there typically are not a lot of contracts for deed done for whatever reason in the metro area as much as we see in greater Minnesota. But once these things fall off the book, so to speak, and that the parties are no longer participating in the contract, under current law, a judicial proceeding is required in order to cancel the contract. What this legislation would do is allow for an examiner's directive to cancel the contract once the parties have gone 5 years without taking action. Once again, this is a something that should improve efficiency and lower costs. I'd like to thank my co-authors, Senators Newman and Latz. We had testimony in the committee in favor of the bill. There was no testimony in opposition to the bill, and Madam President and members, I am unaware of any opposition. Nobody has talked to me opposing any aspect of this bill. So with that, I would respectfully ask members to vote yes, and thank you.
Thank you. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A1 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Rest moves to amend House File Number 262 as follows, page 3, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. This is a provision that deals with how a state tax liability is apportioned among the beneficiaries of an estate when a will does not direct otherwise. Minnesota has a different default rule than the federal government does, and in a sense what we're doing here is just bringing that into conformity. And in general, it involves when an estate involves a Q-tip, trust, which is a very common instrument that those that are entering into second marriages do to protect the assets that one of the spouses brings, or both of the spouses bring to the marriage for their own descendants. And it makes sure that when you have an estate that would not otherwise be taxable for your descendants, that they do not fall into having to pay for that portion of the estate that's going to other beneficiaries. So it is an amendment that will mirror the federal default rule, and it only applies to trusts that do not instruct how taxes are to be divided. It does not affect in any way taxes that are owed, just who among the beneficiaries are liable for what part of it. It has a forward-looking effective date that will give parties for whom this provision would be in operation. It gives them time to adjust their documents if necessary. Again, if a will directs how an estate is to be apportioned, that is what carries the day. In those instances when there is a Q-tip trust and there is no directive, this new default rule would apply. And I understand that Senator Thompson has no objection to the provision, and it's supported by the Bar Association.
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, Senator Rest is correct. She spoke with me about this provision before. I believe it is appropriate to amend it onto this bill, and I agree with what her amendment does. So I would respectfully ask the members to support Senator Rest's amendment.
Any more discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments or discussion on House File 262? Secretary will give House File 262 its third reading.
House File number 262, a bill for an act relating to real property, modifying government approval of plats.
Secretary will take the roll.
I think he had them all.
All members having voted, have all members who desire to vote voted? Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and is titled agreed to. Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Lurie moved that the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate File 1458 at 2 p.m. Lurie, Sharon, Hayden, Franzen, Rosen. Also pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Clausen moved that the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate File 5 at 2:50 p.m. Senators Bonhoff, Clausen, Eakin, Dietzick, and Miller. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move we take up the confirmation calendar.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The first item on the confirmation calendar is Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development reported April 7th, 2015, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Agriculture be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President. Then I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development reported April 7th, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the Department of Agriculture Commissioner Dave Fredrickson.
Senator Sparks, tell us about Commissioner Fredrickson.
Madam President and members, Commissioner Fredrickson has been serving as the Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture since 2010 and has done an excellent job. Prior to his services at the department, he had been a teacher, a farmer, represented rural Minnesota in the Minnesota State Senate, served as the president of both the Minnesota National Farmers Union, and worked in United States Senator Klobuchar's office. As commissioner, he has been dedicated to the needs of the state and has led the department's effort to enhance food safety, ensure environmental quality, and promote agriculture profitability. The commissioner received strong support from the committee, and so, Madam President and members, I would renew my motion and would encourage you to support Dave Fredrickson's confirmation as the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture.
Is there any discussion on the confirmation? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The confirmation was confirmed. Senator Sparks, then on Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Madam President. Then I would move that the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development reported April 7, 2015, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development reported April 7, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the IRRB Commissioner Mark Phillips.
And on Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The IRRB is a development agency to promote and invest in business, community, and workforce development for the betterment of northeastern Minnesota. Mark Phillips is uniquely qualified for this position based on his business development work on both the private and public sectors. Mark's most recent positions were the Director of Business Development at Krauss Anderson Construction Company and is the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Commissioner Phillips' work history also highlights his knowledge of northeastern Minnesota development with numerous occupations in the region. So with that, members, I would like to renew my motion and encourage your support of the confirmation of Mark Phillips as the Commissioner of the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion on the motion to confirm, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The appointment was confirmed. I'm going to revert back to Senator Latz. Senator Latz on the notaries public.
Madam President, I move that the appointment of notaries public received April 7, 2015 be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do now consent to and confirm the appointments of the notaries public.
Do you want to speak to that, Senator Latz?
Madam President, this approves the appointments of the notaries public. It's a standard and routine process that we do for all those who are authorized to be notaries public in the state of Minnesota.
Senator Latz, you're going to list them all now, right?
Every member of the Senate is an ex officio notary public, so if you want to maintain your notary public status, you should approve this.
Is there any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed, so the appointments were confirmed. Next, we have Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move a report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 9th pertaining to the appointments of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 9th in 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of William Faber of Crow Wing County and Della Young of Brooklyn Park and Hennepin County to the LCCMR.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the commissioners?
Madam President, Della Young has been appointed by Governor Dayton to a four-year term. She and Mr. Faber from Crow Wing County, both of them have long-time interest in wildlife natural resources. Ms. Young is a hydrologist, and Mr. Faber is a board member of Wilderness Society and the Grouse Society, and we had no opposition to them in committee. I'd urge your support.
Is there any discussion? Then on the motion to confirm, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The appointments were confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move a report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 9th pertaining the appointments to the MPCA be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 9th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Ernest Morgan of Minneapolis to the MPCA board.
Can you tell us something about Mr. Morgan?
Madam President, members, Mr. Morgan has been a global account manager for BlackBerry Corporation. He's worked there for most of his career. He's from Honeywell as well. He's a new appointee, and we had a good discussion and no opposition that I'm aware of.
Any discussion on the appointment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointment was confirmed.
Madam President.
Back to Senator Marty.
I move a report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 9th pertaining the appointment for Commissioner of Minnesota Pollution Control Agency be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay.
Madam President, I move the foregoing.
Wait a minute. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Sorry. Madam President, I move that foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment reported April 9th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of John Link Stein as Commissioner of the MPCA.
Explain to us a little bit about Mr. Stein.
Madam President, members, Commissioner Stein has been Commissioner of the MPCA for several years now. I think most of us are familiar with him. He worked for the DNR originally in his career. He's worked for the State Health Agency and Health Department and now for MPCA, and we had a good discussion. I urge your support. I think he's been doing a good job.
Is there any discussion on Commissioner Stein? Seeing none on the motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointment was confirmed.
Madam President, I move that the committee on report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 9th pertaining to the appointments of Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 9th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Julie Blackburn of St. Paul and Jane Kingston of St. Louis County, Eveleth, to the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
Tell us a little bit about the candidates.
Madam President, Member Julie Blackburn is a St. Paul resident, been a board member of the Freshwater Society, and worked as assistant director at Bowser. Jane Kingston has been reappointed. She's a lifelong Eveleth resident, and she's worked for U.S. Steel for 20-plus years. I don't know of any opposition to either of them. I urge your support.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none on the motion to confirm, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointments were confirmed.
Finally, Madam President.
Senator Marty, we're going to give you a break and go to Senator Torres Ray. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to, before I start, impose the call of the Senate.
Senate is under call. Senator Torres-Ray, is this for the remainder of the confirmation calendar? Or just for this appointee?
For the remainder, Madam President.
Okay. Members, this is just a call, not a motion to confirm. The board's incorrect. Senator Torres-Ray, would you like to lift the call? You move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant be instructed to bring in the absent members. Is that correct? Thank you.
President, thank you.
Thank you. On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sergeant will bring in the absent members. Senator Torres-Ray, on the confirmation.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 16, 2015, reporting to the appointments of the Gambling Control Board be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported on April 16, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Gino Fragnito and Beth Pinckney.
Could you tell us something about the candidates?
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President and members, Mr. Fragnito has served in the Gambling Control Board for the past 4 years and has experience working with the Minnesota Society of CPAs as the Director of Government Relations since 2005 and as the Legislative Coordinator for the Minnesota State Lottery from 2001 to 2005, has worked on various positions at the lottery prior to 2001, and was a committee administrator for the Minnesota Senate from 1997 to 2001. And Ms. Pinckney served as the executive director of the 2015 National Senior Games and was the president of the St. Paul Festival and Heritage Foundation, which plans the St. Paul Winter Carnival from 2008 to 2013. She has directed many other events prior to these responsibilities. They both appear before our committee and responded to questions. Madam Chair, I believe they had ample opportunity to interact with the members and receive full support.
Is there any discussion? On the motion to confirm, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The appointments were confirmed. Back to Senator Marty, who is not in the chamber. We'll go to Senator Sparks then.
Madam Chair, can I move to lift the call of the Senate?
On the motion to lift the call, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The call is lifted. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development reported April 16, 2015, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Mediation Services be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevail. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development reported April 16, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the Bureau of Mediation Services Commissioner John Tilson.
Tell us a little bit about Mr. Josh Tilson.
Madam President and members, I would ask for your support of this confirmation. Josh Tilson has been ably serving the state of Minnesota as the Commissioner of Mediation, Bureau of Mediation Services, since 2011. During that time, there have been no public sector strikes. The agency has undergone significant IT improvements. They've restarted the Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution and undertaken major revisions of client training programs. Commissioner Tilson has more than 30 years of experience as a mediator, facilitator, administrative hearing officer, arbitrator, and trainer, and has been at the Bureau since 1988. His work and qualifications speak for themselves, and with that, Madam President, I would like to renew my motion and encourage the support of the Commissioner Josh Tilson as the Commissioner of Bureau of Mediation Services.
Is there any discussion on Mr. Tilson? On the confirmation motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed, so the appointment was confirmed. Revert back to Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 14, 2015, be pertaining to appointments to the MPC, to the Minnesota EQB, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy report April 14, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Catherine Knuth of Minneapolis and John Saxhog of Hennepin, of Minneapolis as well, to the EQB.
Can you tell us about the board members?
Madam President, both of these are reappointments. Ms. Knuth is a former House member, and she's a grad student at the University of Minnesota and has been serving on EQB. She and John Saxhog is also being reappointed. He serves as Chief of Land Acquisition for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and I think a lot of members here know both of these folks. Urge your support.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the motion to confirm, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails, so the appointments were confirmed. Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development, reported April 17, 2015, pertaining to appointments to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Bonner.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Bonoff.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Higher Education Workforce Development, reported April 17, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, to now consent to and confirm the appointment of the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
You want to tell us about the candidates?
Yes, Madam President. Madam President, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities is governed by a 15-member Board of Trustees appointed by the governor with consent from the Senate. The board has policy responsibility for system planning, academic programs, fiscal management, personnel admissions requirements, tuition and fees, rules and regulations. The Higher Education Workforce Development Committee heard five candidates for the MinSCU Board of Trustees on April 16th. There was no opposition in committee, and the candidates were confirmed on a unanimous voice vote. The trustees began their terms on nomination by Governor Dayton on August 21st, 2014. Kelly Charpentier-Berg is a student representative from Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Her term would end June 30, 2016. She's currently studying psychology at Anoka Hennepin Tech and Metro State University. She served as president of the Minnesota State College Association from 2013 and 14. She would represent technical college students on the board. Robert Hoffman from Waseca, Minnesota, would be serving a term ending June 30, 2020. Recently retired from Vice President of Strategic Business Education and Regional Partnerships at Minnesota State University Mankato. He previously served on the board from 2000 to 2006, including 2 years as chair. He was originally nominated by Governor Ventura. Malia Otterson, student representative from St. Paul, represents the community college students. Her term would end June 30, 2016. She's currently studying at the Normandale Community College and serves on various levels of student government. Louise Sundin from Minneapolis would serve until June 30, 2020. Ms. Sundin is Executive Vice President of the Minneapolis Regional Labor Federation, AFL-CIO. She's been involved with various teaching associations and unions for over 20 years. She was originally appointed by Governor Pawlenty. And finally, Irma Visnor from White Earth, Minnesota, would serve until June 30, 2020. Visnor has been the chairwoman of the White Earth Reservation since 2004. She was the first woman elected to this position. She has spent her entire career working in education on the White Earth Reservation.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the candidates for the MinSCU board? Seeing none, on the motion to confirm the candidates, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed, so the appointments were confirmed. Senator Torres Ray is currently not on the floor. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 28, 2015, pertaining to appointments. I have one before that.
The Shalito one.
April 23rd. Let me repeat that, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 23, 2015, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs be taken now from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray.
Madam President, I move that in accordance to the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 23, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Larry Shelato to the Department of to the Commission as a Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Senator Torres-Ray, tell us a little bit about Mr. Shelato.
Thank you, Madam President. We had a wonderful hearing with Commissioner Shelato, who was able to really share a lot of personal information and give us an overview of the changes that have happened at the Veteran Affairs Department. Major General Shelato served over 30 years at Alexandria Technical College and was the president of the college for 9 years. In 2003, General Shelato was appointed as the Minnesota National Guard Adjutant General and served for 7 years in that position. He helped establish the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program that was later adopted as a national program, and Governor Dayton initially appointed the Major as Commissioner of Veterans Affairs in 2011, and he was previously confirmed in 2011 by the Senate.
Is there any discussion on the appointment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the confirmation say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevailed, so the appointment was confirmed. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. I now need to impose the call of the Senate.
Senate is under call.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed.
Senator Torres-Ray, let's wait till we get to 34.
Thank you.
We haven't even started the call yet, so just wait a few minutes. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now you can lift
Madam
the call.
President. Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Senator Torres-Ray. Members, could you keep the noise down a little bit, especially in the back? It's awfully noisy. Thank you.
Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 28, 2015, pertaining to the appointments of the Metropolitan Council be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 28, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of the Metropolitan Council.
Senator Torres-Ray, maybe a sentence on each person.
Thank you. I'm going to do my best. There's 16 members, so I'm going to try to go in the order. You have an order that is not the order of the actual district's members, so I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, if that's okay with Madam President and the members. So the first one I have is District 1, Katie Rodriguez. Ms. Rodriguez currently serves as a business manager for the League of Women Voters, and prior to working for the League, she worked as a finance director for the Village of North Aurora at Assistant Director for the Village of Villa Park in Illinois. District 2, we have Ms. Lona Shriver. Ms. Shriver has been a member of the Metropolitan Council since 2011 and serves as the Vice Chair of the Transportation Committee and Environment and Litigation Committee. She was the Intergovernmental Coordinator for Anoka County from 1998 to 2009. District 3, we have Ms. Jennifer Mont. Ms. Mont has served at the Metropolitan Council since 2011 and co-chairs the Southwest Light Rail Transit Community Advisory Committee. She is currently the Director of Public Policy and Public Affairs with AFSCME Council, and was formerly the communication directors of the Hiawatha Light Rail Project. District 4 is Ms. Deb Barber. Ms. Barber is a co-founder of Canopy Medical LLC, which is a medical device consulting firm. She was also the vice president of Shakopee Economic Development Advisory Committee for the City of Shakopee, a board member of Shakopee School Board, and a member of the Scott County Board. District 5, we have Mr. Stephen Elkins. He has been a member of the Metropolitan Council since 2011 and was a member of the Bloomington City Council from 2002 to 2010. He has served on the Bloomington HRIA and is currently the chair of the National League of Cities Transportation Infrastructure and Service Policy Committee. District 6, we have Ms. Gail Dorman. Ms. Dorman has served as a Hennepin County Commissioner since 1999. She was the mayor of St. Louis Park from 1995 to 1999, and she was a member of the St. Louis City Council prior to her election as mayor. For District 7, we have Mr. Gary Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham is the director of MEDA, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, and worked most recently as the vice president of programs for the Northwest Area Foundation, has served as the chief program strategist for their grant-making program. From 1999 to 2007, he was also the CEO and director of nonprofit North Point Health and Wellness Center. For District 8, we have Ms. Carol Latovsky. Ms. Latovsky is the founder and principal of Mill City Council City Consulting LLC, which focuses on policy and program development for nonprofit management and government relations. She was a policy aide for the City of Minneapolis from 2006 to 2010, and she also worked with the Lindale Neighborhood Development Corporation. For District 9, we have Edward Reynoso. Ms. Reynoso serves as the political director for the Teamsters Local Council 32 and a member of the Governor's Workforce Development Council, Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, and the Minnesota Jobs and Skill Partnership. District 10, we have Ms. Mary McCarthy. Ms. McCarthy currently works for the Minnesota Senate as a legislative assistant. She works as a vice president of America, of Air America Minnesota, and was responsible for sales and marketing for potential and recruitment of potential clients. She was also in the board of directors of the Red Cross for 7 years. District 11, Ms. Sandy Rummel. Ms. Rummel is a former state senator from White Bear Lake and has served at the Metropolitan Council for 3.5 years. From 1980 to 2006, she was the president co-founder of Rummel, Dobbs, and Hill, Inc., a communications consulting organization. District 12, we have Harry Melander. Mr. Melander is the president of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council and the executive secretary of the St. Paul Building and Construction Trades Council. He was a business representative with the St. Paul Council from 1997 to 2006. From District 13, we have Richard Kramer. Mr. Kramer has been a member of the Metropolitan Council since 2011. He was appointed to the St. Paul Planning Commission in 1994, serving 6 terms with three mayors, and until 2012. He's currently the chair of the St. Paul Charter Commission. District 14, Mr. Jonathan Commerce. Mr. Commerce is a founder of Donjek Incorporated, which is an urban redevelopment consulting business. He serves in the St. Paul Planning Commission from 2006 to 2012 and was a project manager for Springston Public Finance Advisors. District 15, Mr. Stephen Chavez. Mr. Chavez has served on the Metropolitan Council since 2011 and works for Integrated Governance Solutions as a managing director of public advocacy. He has worked as a consulting attorney for Fortune 500 and mid-cap corporate clients since 1987. District 16, Ms. Wendy Wolf. Ms. Wolf has served on the Metropolitan Council since 2009 I was formerly a self-employed web designer. She was a member of the board of directors for the League of Minnesota Cities and the Metropolitan Legislative Commission. She was a member of the Lakeville City Council for 6 years. And that's it, Madam President.
Is there any discussion, any questions? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to take a brief moment to speak about one of the new nominees, Deb Barber. Deb is from Shakopee and is the first Scott County appointee to the Met Council in almost 30 years. The last Scott County person to be on the Met Council was Mr. Joachim, whose term ended in 1987. As Senator Torres Ray said, Ms. Barber's been very involved in the community. She served as treasurer for her children's school's parent-teacher organization, but she's also been part of the economic development infrastructure in Shakopee and in Scott County, being part of the First Stop Shop Advisory Committee for the Scott County Area Leaders for Efficiency. And if you don't know about that group, it's a group where all the governmental entities come together and try to find ways to work cooperatively. And so when I look at Ms. Barber's professional experience, her community involvement, I just want to tell members that I know Deb and she's going to be extremely qualified for this position.
Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Madam President. And I know it may shock some people that I'm going to speak kindly about a member of the Metropolitan Council. I have one in my area that I think is doing a good job. I may not necessarily be in favor of the Metropolitan Council as it's configured, but I believe that Commissioner Rodriguez has done a very good job of representing her district. She actually goes to mayor's meetings. She engages with her city councils. She has been a very good representative from what my city councils have said. She also helped out a city that was not in her district, the city of Long Lake. And I think I told that story rather recently, but they had an issue with whack and sack charges. They tried to engage one of their Met Council representative and never got a phone call back. And they reached out, I believe it was, to Commissioner Rodriguez, and she helped her out. Even though she doesn't represent that city, she did help that city out in dealing with a situation with the Met Council, and it was resolved positively for the city. So I commend Commissioner Rodriguez for doing what she did, and her certainly hope that she is reappointed. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the nominees for the council? Seeing none, all those in favor of consenting to the appointments, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The appointments were confirmed. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 28, 2015, pertaining to the appointment of the chair of the Metropolitan Council be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Torres Ray.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with a report from the Committee on State and Local Government reported April 28, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Metropolitan Council Chair Adam Dunick.
Okay. Senator Torres Ray, tell us a little bit about Mr. Dunick.
Thank you, Madam President and members. We had a wonderful discussion with Mr. Dunick in committee. We had ample participation of members, and it was really a great opportunity for the members to interact with Mr. Dunick, to ask about his background, and to really get a sense of his vision for the future of the council. Mr. Dunick has served in the Metropolitan Council since 2011 and has experience in transportation, policy, planning, and construction. He was previously the executive director for WIN Minnesota. Mr. Dunick was the political director for the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 49, and he has served as the chair of the Transportation Committee since his initial appointment to the Metropolitan Council and is the chief liaison for transportation, the Transportation Advisory Board. He has experience managing staff through the position and has significant experience as a construction worker and organizer. Mr. Dunick has used all of his skills to travel around the state to connect the organization with the different counties that are represented in the Metropolitan Council, building relationships to bring those voices to the council. Madam President, again, we had a wonderful discussion with Mr. Dunick about the future of the council and his intention to really bring the communities together and bring participation from local jurisdictions. That's what I have.
Is there any discussion? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. I request a roll call vote on this nomination.
Roll call requested. Roll call granted.
Madam President, I rise in opposition to this appointment. It probably doesn't surprise a lot of people. I looked at his resume. I actually requested his resume, and I requested the resumes of all the other individuals who applied for the Met Council, and I was asked early in the process, would I support him? And I said, well, I want to look what his experience is, his credentials. I also want to look at the individuals that applied. And there were three different sections I looked at. One was, did they have elective experience? Did they have any elective experience? And the reason why I wanted to find that out was because they have to work with city councils, and it's just not one or two or 20 in some cases that some of our Met Council reps have to deal with in their districts. But they have to work with all of them, from the big to the little, from the Minneapolises to the Loretto's. Do they have some elective experience which would make them qualified, or better yet, have some experience package in working as a city council member, knowing planning, knowing zoning ordinances, understanding processes? I looked at that as one of the qualifications. The second qualification I looked at was any educational experience they have, because certainly having a degree is a good thing. It's not exclusive. There are some good people in the United States that are very successful that don't have degrees, but it's one thing you look at. Bill Gates comes to mind. Scott Walker over in Wisconsin has been elected 3 times. Certainly doesn't have a degree. It's not exclusive, but it is something you look at as the package of qualifications. Then the last one is, what is their executive experience? What have they been a leader for? The Met Council has over $1 billion worth of taxing and spending available to them. Have they led large organizations? Have they led organizations where they had executive directors or other departments that they've had to actually do that type of executive management experience? And as the chief of the Met Council, granted, you're only still one of 17, but as now has been found that he's going to be a full-time employee, he has far more importance in that organization. So I looked at those three as the qualifications. And I looked down the resumes of the individuals. Some of them had 20 years experience on city councils, 9 years. We had a former member of this body apply. We had mayors, we had county commissioners apply. Mr. Dunick didn't have any of that experience package. I said, well, okay, well, let's look at the other sections. And we did have some people with doctorates from university or from Notre Dame. Not that important, but again, it's something that's telling. Do you really, you know, is that something you prize, or if when you're looking at qualifications, you're hiring somebody to run a $1 billion organization? Then I looked at the experience package, the executive experience package. That's where it really fell off the tracks for me, so to speak. I appreciate the fact that Mr. Dunick has been working for WIN Minnesota. He's been responsible for managing a staff of 2. That's according to his resume. 2. 2 people. 2 FTEs. 2. We have people on this list that didn't make the cut, that were 21-year consulting attorneys. We have communication specialists over 11 years. We've got a gentleman who was a superintendent of schools for 18 years. We've got a person that had 30 years experience in the private sector with healthcare. A lot of experience lot of good experience managing people. Mr. Dunnick had two people he worked for or had working for him, and he was directing. The other more important part of his experience package that really was very troubling was that he most recently worked as a fundraiser for the DFL. But of course, there's one, and you could say whether that's qualified or not, but I think the last one was the one that wasn't. The experience package that wasn't on his resume is that he's married to the chief of staff of the governor of the state of Minnesota. I will use the word I used in the newspaper. This is cronyism. You may think that he's qualified. He's a nice gentleman, I'll tell you right now. He sat in my office for a half an hour. I asked him many different questions on his philosophy, and I said I would give him a fair hearing, and I did. But, members, we're talking about billions of dollars. We're talking about an experience package that was passed over. We passed over all of the other qualified candidates for him. His biggest claim to fame, two things: bringing money to the DFL and to the governor, and being married to the governor's chief of staff. Members, we should not be confirming Adam Dunnick. He may do a good job. I'm sure the people in the back room are going to confirm him. But we have an opportunity to pick somebody maybe a little bit better. Maybe there's better qualified candidates than someone who has no real elective or elective experience or executive experience. None. So with that, members, I'm not going to belabor the point. I would appreciate a no vote on this confirmation. Thank you.
Senator Dipple.
Thank you, Madam President. I would rise in support of this appointment of Adam Dunnick to serve as chair of the Metropolitan Council. A quick point of response first to Senator Osmick. A number of folks have served in leadership of the Met Council who have a political background and political connections and the like, and that has not disqualified them. And as a matter of fact, they have served with distinction. A number of folks have served on the Met Council itself and served as the chair of the Met Council. And I think that that probably is actually something we should take as a benefit, because that means that we have folks who are versed in the role of political leadership and policy formation and working with diverse constituencies and the like to get things done. Adam Dunnick does bring some important qualifications and personal qualities to this job. First, I think we should probably take a look at his role, at the role that he has served while he's been on the Met Council itself. He's served as the liaison from the Met Council to the Transportation Advisory Board, which is the body we know of 33 elected officials and appointed officials and citizen volunteers who work to develop the regional transportation priorities and initiatives. He served as the chair of the Met Council's Transportation Board. And in those roles, he provided a great deal of leadership, put a lot of extra time of his own, really trying to work closely with communities, working through issues and controversies as they rose up, trying to shape and move a regional transportation transit vision for our metropolitan area. And that's difficult work, and that's frankly, I think, why he was tapped to become the chair, because he really rose to leadership in that role as a Met Council member itself. Since he's been the chair, he's traveled to all seven counties. I actually have a schedule of his appointments that he's kept for these last few weeks, and it's chock full every single day, going to every single county, many municipalities, many of our districts, touring sites, having lunch, having coffee, doing a lot of listening and talking and discussing. And that's exactly what we want in a Met Council chair. I think that's something that's been articulated now for quite some time by a lot of members from every part of the region, from every political stripe, what we've heard from municipal officials and county officials and local business leaders and neighborhood leaders and the like, to really have a high-touch, highly visible, Met Council Chair, who's in a posture of listening, working, negotiating, working through, creating a larger vision. We operate as a regional entity. We operate within our own cities and our own counties, but we need to come together around the big things, the major investments, the major services. And Adam Dunick has been really showing, I think, by how he's been prioritizing his time and what he's been doing since he's been chair, really trying to move the culture of the governing body in that direction, and moving the culture of the service organization in that direction as well. As for the actual day-to-day functioning and executive leadership of the organization itself, we know that we have Patrick Bourne, of course, who's the regional administrator, who takes care of the staff function as the essentially the executive director of the Metropolitan Council. And he reports to the Met Council and to Adam, and he carries out a lot of those daily executive functions. Going further back in Adam Dunick's experience, he's worked as a construction worker, which was, I think, extremely beneficial. He's helped build transportation infrastructure and facilities, done project management, labor management, managing job site. He's done quite a number of other things as well in his professional life that suit him. And the leadership role that he's going to serve as a communicator, as a facilitator, someone who's bringing folks together. He's doing a great job as is. He did a great job as a Met Council member, and I think he's going to be exactly what we're looking for, what we've been looking for some time in this leadership role for our region. And so you've seen a lot of praise come forward from Scott County, Carver County, Washington, Ramsey, Hennepin, Anoka, folks who have really appreciated the time he's taken convening folks and really listening, and we need more of that. We've seen bus ridership increase. We've seen a lot of improvements since he's been on the Met Council, and I think we're going to look forward to more as he takes over the helm of the chair. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that I find it a little offensive when someone is objected to and in position because of their spouse. It's not unusual that two people dedicated to public service would end up together, and they are separate individuals with separate skills and abilities, and they're both highly qualified professionals. I don't care if it's the woman being told she's not qualified because of her husband or partners, or I just think it's, in this day and age, it's a pretty archaic way of looking at things.
Is there any more discussion? Then the motion to confirm the appointment of Adam Dunick, a roll call has been requested. The secretary will take the roll. We're under call. Everyone. Senator Dibble.
Madam President, may we excuse those not voting? I believe they're out in conference committee.
On the motion to excuse those not voting, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Secretary will close the roll. There being 38 ayes and 22 nays, the motion prevailed, so the appointment was confirmed. Next, we turn to Senator Metzen.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on Commerce be reported May 1st, 2015, pertaining to the appointment of Commerce Commissioner, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Metzen.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Metzen.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Commerce reported May 1st, 2015, the Senate, having given it its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of Department of Commerce, Mike Rothman.
And tell us something about Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Rothman is a commissioner in the Minnesota Department of Commerce. He was appointed January 11th, 2011. As commissioner, Mr. Rothman oversees the departments of regulated industries, including insurance, financial institutions, natural gas, telephone sectors, and energy conservation. The department administrates the low-income energy programs and also regulates the accuracy of scales, pumps used for fuel and goods. Transactions in the state. Commissioner Rothman graduated with honors from Carleton College and the University of Minnesota Law School. He worked in the Senate under Bill Luther for a while. He clerked for the Minnesota Court of Appeals and practiced law in Minnesota and California.
Is there any discussion on the confirmation of Mr. Rothman? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like a roll call on this.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Senator Gazelka.
Madam President, members, as the Republican lead on the Commerce Committee, I need to rise and express my opposition to Commissioner Rothman. I think I'm on friendly terms with Mike Rothman, and there are areas that I think he deserves credit. Beefing up the Fraud Bureau, Commerce Fraud Bureau, I think was important. And the financial literacy program that he's trying to help across Minnesota, I think are two really good things. But he's made a couple of major missteps that, in addition, he was unwilling to come clean of. And it's because of that that I feel like it deserves a roll call and deserves a no vote. One of those missteps was related to his work related to the community action of Minneapolis, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that area. I think others are going to speak to that. But I will say when there was serious ongoing political shenanigans were happening, he looked the other way. In fact, the paper was quoted those that were under him in the Commerce Department when they were asking him why he was not moving forward. He simply said, the political ramifications are greater than staff would understand, unquote. And so he failed to act there, and I think that is worthy of mentioning here and I think is serious. The other area that I will spend a little more time on is Commissioner Rothman's role with Minsure. His fingerprints are all over Minsure and the Minsure debacle. It wouldn't be fair to say he was completely responsible. I think the governor deserves some responsibility there, certainly the Minsure board, DHS, and others. But I do want to focus on the areas that he did and should be held responsible for and things that he did not act like I think he should have. The first one goes to the legislative auditor's report and listening to Mr. Nobles talk about getting into the detail of why Minsure was not working. And one of those things was the role that April Todd Malmove had and who hired her. And Mr. Nobles went to a number of
folks in leadership, and one of those was Commissioner Rothman, and could not simply get a simple answer of who hired her. And finally, Commissioner Rothman told Mr. Nobles that she simply emerged. You know, and folks, that's not good enough. That is not coming clean. And then when we then found out that documentation was found, we got that back years earlier, Politics in Minnesota had quoted him as saying that he was the one that hired her. And so why not just say, you know, I hired her, it was my fault, it didn't work out. But that's not what he did. And then secondly, related to Preferred One, I have a handout that you all got. It says Milliman on the top, but it's a public document dealing with what happened to Preferred One and their rates being requested to be lowered. The Department of Commerce requested three times that Preferred One lower their rates. They lowered the rates twice to a total reduction of 37%, 37% below what they initially filed as the rate they thought they needed. On the third request, they said, please remind them that we've already lowered them twice. And the reason why I bring that up is because when we were talking to Commissioner Rothman, he implied twice that they wanted to be the lowest rate out there. But that's not what that document shows. The document shows that there was strong pressure to lower those rates as much as three times. It turned out that they then were the lowest provider and ended up writing 60% of all the MNsure policyholders. But what happened? They lost. Their loss ratio was 140%. In other words, they lost money even if they were able to charge that first rate. But because they lost so much money, they left MNsure the next year, dropping 60% of the market out of MNsure. They left and had to raise their rates over 60% up to those that remained. They ended up having to secure additional financing. They ended up getting their AM Best rating downgraded to a place that some agents wouldn't even be able to sell for them because some agents' errors and omissions require that you have a certain rating from a company to be able to sell them. And the part that bothers me and why I'm highlighting it is then to say, well, they wanted to have the lowest rate does not fit with that document. And finally, when the rates finally came out and the dust settled the second time around and only saying that the rates went up 4.5%, I think was disingenuous. And so those are some of the key reasons that I'm rising to not support Commissioner Rothman. There were times that where he looked at it and I think maybe felt like he had the right to remain silent. I think he had the responsibility to speak up, and he chose not to. And because of those reasons that I've mentioned, I'm a no vote, and I recommend a no vote.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam President. As Senator Gazelka highlighted, I'm also concerned with Commissioner Rothman's oversight of Community Action of Minneapolis, or CAM, and the LIHEAP program. After learning of problems at Community Action in 2012, the commissioner had a tepid response to improve oversight and allowed mismanagement at CAM for another 2.5 years. Even after DHS issued an audit that showed that the organization misspent over $800,000, Commerce staff told the media that they were still being directed to extend CAM's contract for energy assistance. Now, what concerns me is that the commissioner succumbed to political pressure. In the article on your desk that I passed out, he admits that politics played a role in his decision. It says here, Commerce Commissioner Mike Rothman, who has known Davis for years, conceded politics played a role in the handling of the organization whose leader was a big supporter of Governor Mark Dayton, appeared as a featured guest at a Dayton fundraiser. I'm voting against Commissioner Rothman because we need a commissioner that's going to put Minnesota taxpayers ahead of partisan politics.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I'm just going to repeat what I said in Commerce when Senator Pratt read something that I had said and that got in the paper. The issue with Commissioner Rothman and the CAP agency was interesting because he's the first commissioner in the last three administrations that has done anything about the issue with the CAP agency of Minneapolis. He's the first one that investigated that out of the Carlson administration, the Ventura administration, and the Pawlenty administration. The first one to make sure that that agency got shut down so that they could not continue to misuse federal and state funds and not help the poor. I saw the budget for that agency in 1998, and I presented that to the administration at that time, and they were not interested in pursuing the large amount of spending that was actually, I thought unlawful spending. And many employees of that agency also reported the problems throughout the last three administrations, and nothing happened. So I'm glad that something finally did, because millions of dollars went out of that agency that went out inappropriately and should have been spent for the programs they were designed for. So I just want to say that, and with that, I want to say that I think Commissioner Rothman is probably the best Commissioner of Commerce we've had for a long time. And I'm on the Commerce Committee. We've seen the good work that he does in other ways, and I just want to support his commission. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I rise with concerns on Commissioner Rothman's reappointment. Remember in first of October, when rates were released, the number that was released was a 4.5% increase. As we all know, that was far from the actual increase that came about. In fact, the company that ended up with a lot of the business had an over 17% average increase. And just in my district alone, I find it very interesting. I have two different rating areas. I have Area 4 and Area 5. And if we take a look at the 25-year-olds, the rate increases anywhere from 13 to 32%, depending on which policy they chose. And for the 40-year-olds, it was anywhere from 13 to 34. For the 60s, 30 to 33, and that was on the cheap side. On the other area, if we took the 25-year-olds, it was 24 to 43%. 40-year-olds were 24 to 43, and the 60-year-olds were 24 to 44%. If we take a look at the Kaiser information, in Minneapolis, just depending on the age and stuff, the rate went from anywhere from 18.5 to 21.4% increase. And if you're wondering what the point of this, why I'm bringing this up, obviously, if you make the figures work the way you want them work, you can come up with a 4.5%. But I don't feel that was fair to the state of Minnesota, to our constituents, and especially the people that were on MnSure and wanted to continue to be on MnSure. About that time of the year is when a lot of people are doing their budgeting. And if you find out that the average rate increase is 4.5% and you're on MnSure, I would assume a lot of people would think, well, even if it doubled, you know, it's certainly not going to be more than double the average. So they'd still probably look at a 10%. But when you take a look at the average being anywhere from around that 17%, and as I showed in my district, anywhere from 20.5% to 33.75%, depending on which policy and which age bracket, I think we put a lot of people in harm's way, and I don't think there was any reason to do that. I think we should have. I think our commissioner should have been very straightforward and explained that the average rate of 4.5% probably was not what people are going to receive, and been more straightforward and forthright with the actual numbers. When we see a 4.5% is stated what the increase is going to be, and then you see the increases we're really seeing, that's not the way that we should be doing business in Minnesota. So with those concerns and stuff, I too will be voting against Commissioner Rothman's reaffirming, and I would ask that other people do the same.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I think that we should not confirm Commissioner Rothman to a second term as Commissioner of the Commerce Department. Members and members of the public should know this too. The duty of the Senate is to confirm the or not confirm, based on their judgment, the appointments the governor makes to the various administrative departments of the executive branch. When the Republicans were in the majority in Governor Dayton's first term, all of these commissioners came before the Republican majority. All of them were confirmed. And they were confirmed because I believe, and I think members of our caucus believe, that governors have the right to choose people that they want to administer their policies. I believe that's important. That's part of the executive branch. The governor wins an election, he should have the people that he wants to help him administer his policies, even if we disagree with them. And we made that point then, even though I can tell you there were members of my caucus, and I was one of them, that were not entirely happy with every one of the governor's choices. We probably would have chosen differently had we had that role, but we didn't have that role. And we had the role at that time to make a decision whether or not we should confirm the governor's appointments, and we did. Now we've had a second opportunity now to look at Commissioner Rothman. And the issue with Commissioner Rothman is very simple, I think. I think the public deserves, the commissioner has every right to appoint people that meet his criteria that will implement his policy, but the public has the right to have people who administer these departments who are not going to use that role for a political purpose. And that is what I think the argument that we're hearing today on the floor is really about. It seems to us that there are actions that this commissioner has taken that were taken purely for political purposes. Senator Dames has talked about the way that the rate announcements were handled. Why would anybody do that? Why would a commissioner describe the rate changes in the way that he did? There's only one answer to that, because it was politically a good thing for a member of the Dayton administration to put this program in the best possible light politically, and so that's what we did. That's what he did. And that's wrong. That is not the role of the Commissioner of Commerce to play a political, have a political role in the governor's political debates about the value of a policy. He's there to administer a policy and to do it fairly and honestly and not put political spin on what is happening and in fact, as Senator Dames pointed out, mislead the public as to what is really going on. I think, too, the remarks that Senator Gazelka made, or Senator Pratt, when you have a commissioner that says publicly in the paper that he did not do things that were in his duty to do because of political concerns, I'm talking about Community Action of Minneapolis, that's a problem. That is a problem. And any commissioner who says, I'm not going to do my job because I'm concerned about how that will make the governor look politically, that should disqualify anyone from being a commissioner in the Department of Commerce or any other department. So my point here is that this is not just, you know, political, you know, we're Republicans, the governor is a Democrat, so we're not going to vote for his commissioners because they're part of the governor's team. That's not it at all. If that was the case, we wouldn't have confirmed any of them when the governor was in his first term, and we confirmed them all, including Commissioner Rothman. I think it's different. It's a different standard that needs to apply. And that's the standard that we are trying to apply here. Does Commissioner Rothman deserve the trust of the public, or has he abused that trust? And we think he's abused it, and he should not be confirmed, and I urge a red vote.
Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President, and I apologize to Senator Hahn for stepping on his closing comments. I couldn't get your attention soon enough. Madam President, I don't serve on the Commerce Committee. I don't serve on the committees that see much interaction with the Commerce Department, but I did have a lot of activity involved when Minsher was coming before this body and this legislature. I do serve on the Minsher Oversight Committee, and so I felt compelled to make a few comments here today. There was an earlier vote for an appointment that I voted against. Typically over the years I've said, when the Senate is going to confirm someone, we should go to the default that they should be confirmed unless there's an act of disqualification. And I realized that there was a supposition, an assumption in that statement, that they are in fact qualified in the first place. That's why I voted no on that other appointment. I don't feel that they were qualified at all for that appointment. In this case, there's no question Commissioner Rothman is qualified. I had the opportunity, not very often, but a little bit, with my involvement with Binshore, the Oversight Committee, and the Health Committee, a very, very, very intelligent man. And we heard the credentials. They're there. But I do believe that he has disqualified himself. And we've heard some of the comments here. First, what I find concerning, and we could debate whether this is disqualifying or not, but I certainly find concerning, is what Senator Hand mentioned with Commissioner Rothman refusing to take activity because of political consequences. And so the comments that we heard earlier about, well, gosh, gee whiz, at least this Commissioner of Commerce did something. Let me quote to you from the Minnesota Public Radio investigative article. When the state finally cracked down, it was the Department of Human Services, not Commerce. Commerce acted because it was, at that point, too politically dangerous not to. It took the Department of Human Services to get involved. They don't even have oversight of this. Commerce is the one that gives out the money. But the Department of Human Services said, this is way too messed up. We have to get involved. Then finally, Commissioner Rothman said, yep, Commerce is going to get involved. And why would that be? Again, from the same investigative report, speaking to employees in the Department of Commerce, several in the department say they were told the contracts would continue because, quote, the political ramifications are greater than staff would understand. A characterization Rothman does not dispute. So he is tacitly acknowledging that's exactly what he told his staff. The political ramifications are too big. Apparently, until Department of Human Services got involved. Now, you could say, well, that's just politics. Maybe it is. But it's not good. But here's for me the kicker. I believe it is inherently obvious that Commissioner Rothman either willfully misled the public or actively allowed that misleading to happen. And we've heard some conversation about this, too, when the 2014 rates were announced for the Minsure on premium increases. We were promised Minsure was going to keep rates low. We had the lowest rates in the nation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Expectations were set very high that rate increases were going to come in low. Now, I'm going to give you maybe a little bit of an extreme example, but simplified numbers of the kind of math that Commissioner Rothman used that resulted in absolutely misleading numbers that he either promoted or allowed to get out without clarification. If I've got a pool of 1,000 people, 998 of them are in Plan A. I've got one in Plan B and one in Plan C. Plan A is going to have a 10% increase. Plan B with one person is going to have a 2% increase, and Plan C is going to have a 1.5% increase. I've got 1,000 people, 99.8% of which are in Plan A. They're going to see a 10% increase. 998 out of 1,000 are going to get a 10% increase. What Commissioner Rothman did is said, well, a 10% increase plus a 2% increase plus a 1.5% increase, 3. That's 13.5. You divide that by 3, you get 4.5% of an average increase. He let everybody believe they're going to get a 4.5% increase when he knew full well, using this example, that 99.8% of them are going to get a 10% increase, a much bigger increase. But the political ramifications of putting out that number would have been significant. You see a pattern here? That is absolutely misleading. Regardless of whether Commissioner Rothman promoted that number or whether he allowed that number to go out without clarification, absolutely misled the public. And that's disqualifying, in my opinion.
Is there any more discussion?
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
I'd like to move pursuant to Rule 41.2 to be excused from voting on this matter.
On that motion by Senator Latz, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. You're excused from voting. Is there any more discussion? Then roll call was requested. Secretary will take the roll on the confirmation motion.
Madam President.
Senator Metzen.
I'd like to excuse those not voting.
Can't have a roll call in the middle of a roll call. On those not voting are in conference committee. So on the motion to excuse those not voting, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Then all members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 22 nays, the motion prevails, so the appointment was confirmed. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on Judiciary, reported May 4, 2014, pertaining to appointments to the Board on Judicial Standards, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Judiciary, reported May 4, 2015, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of to the Board on Judicial Standards, Terry Sario, Cindy Telstad, and William Wernz.
Senator Latz, tell us briefly about each candidate.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Terry Sario has experience in philanthropy, corporate affairs, and government. She served as a program officer at the Ford Foundation. She was a special assistant to President Carter's assistant for women's affairs and a deputy assistant secretary in the United States Department of Education. She's been the director of corporate contributions and community affairs at the Standard Oil Company, vice president of community affairs at Pillsbury Company, and president of the Northwest Area Foundation. She's also served on numerous nonprofit and corporate boards. This is a reappointment, and I'd ask for your support for Ms. Sario. Cindy Telstad is a lawyer. She's one of the attorney appointments. She works at the law firm of Streeter and Murphy. She lives in Winona. Her area of practice is primarily real estate law, probate and trust administration, estate planning, and business law. Before joining that firm, she clerked at the Minnesota Court of Appeals for Judge Suzanne Sedgwick and for Winona County District Court Judge Lawrence Collins. She's an elected fellow of the American College of Real Estate Lawyers, a respected national organization of real estate attorneys. And she's co-chair of the Minnesota Title Standards Committee. She has been involved in legal ethics for 20 years with positions on the 3rd District Ethics Committee and the Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board. Members, William Wernz is probably the foremost expert in Minnesota on legal ethics. He's the author of the treatise on Minnesota legal ethics. He's a past director of the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility, and the Supreme Court appointed him to a committee to review that board, and he recommended rule changes as a result. He is a former ethics partner at the law firm of Dorsey and Whitney. All of these appointments passed Judiciary Committee on a voice vote without any audible objection. I ask for your support.
Is there any discussion? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President, and members, Senator Latz. I wanted to make sure that the Senate realized that the three candidates that we interviewed and unanimously supported are all people that we have come to research well, but in addition to research, have a profound respect for, and that we highly recommend all three to be passed into confirmation this afternoon.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the confirmation motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The appointments were confirmed. That's the end of the confirmation calendar. Are there any announcements? Remaining under motions and resolutions, we revert to messages from the House. And Secretary will read the motion, the report.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file number 417, a bill for an act relating to professional engineers. Senate file number 1816, a bill for an act relating to property, regulating property transfers. Senate file number 1499, a bill for an act relating to local government, extending the time period to file certificate of approval of a special law for the Cedar Lake Area Water and Sanitary Sewer District. And Senate file number 1741, a bill for an act relating to health, allowing a patient to enjoin collection actions taken by a nonprofit hospital. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House file number 848. House file number 848, a bill for an act relating to financing and operation of state and local government, making changes to individual income, corporate franchise, property, sales and use, excise, estate, etc. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed thereon. Davids, Drazkowski, Barrett, Swedzinski, and Lincheski have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House file number 848 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House file number 848 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
We still could harbor a lot of suspicion, but at the same time, you got to just.
Madam President, I move a brief recess for the purpose of appointing a conference committee.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Senate stands in brief recess. Senator Bach.
Madam President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
Secretary will read the report.
Senator Bach from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 848. Senators Skoy, Rest, Dietzick, Kunin, and Gazelka. Senator Bach moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Announcements. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, wanted to announce at this point that the social event of the year is going to be occurring tonight. It's the I-90 Coalition Party. You have a flyer on your desk. It is at Kellogg Square. It goes from 5:30 to 9:30. I certainly, on behalf of Senator Sparks and myself, and frankly, Senator Rosen, Senator Sharon, Senator Jensen, Senator Nelson, Senator Smith, Schmidt, and Senator Miller, all who sort of reside along the corridor, want you to think about coming. We'd love to see you here. It's going to be a great evening.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, I thought the social event of the year was my announcement of finance at 6 o'clock tonight.
Are there any other announcements?
Madam President.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. The E-12 Conference Committee will meet immediately following adjournment. Our House conferees are in room 112 waiting to talk turkey.
Without objection, the following members will be excused from today's session. Senator Rosen, 11 to 3:15. Senator Chamberlain, all day. Senator Ortman, 120 to 130. Senator Hoffman, Sieben, and Kent, 150 to 155. Senator Cohen, 1 to 145. Senator Bach, 110 to 150. Senator Nienau, 145 to 215. Senator Rest, 115 to 155. Senator Saxhog, 120 to 2 p.m. Senator Housley, 3 p.m. till the end of session. Senator Senjum and Limmer, 110 to 130. Senator Stump, 2 to 3 p.m. Senator Westrum, 310 to the end of session. Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do not adjourn until May 6th, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.
Well, now we have to wait around until 6 o'clock.
Not necessary.